pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at the Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Thursday morning, 6 minutes after the hour. So come on the program in about 30 minutes from now, from the Alabama Policy Institute, Phil Williams will join us. So make sure you stay tuned for that. By the way, 251-343-0106, you want to react to anything we are discussing this morning, delays in the Alabama Literacy Act, the Rittenhouse trial, some of the new polling for U.S. Senate, or you just want to weigh in on Joe Bonner being named the new University of South Alabama president. That's your place to do it. Hit us up on the text line. Joining us now on the line, very excited to bring on my next guest. He is running for state auditor, but he's also a member of the Alabama legislature, Andrew Sorrell. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing really well. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, it's always good to get you on. We'll start here. How's the campaign going?
You know, I feel the campaign is going really, really well. We continue to lead in the fundraising. We are, you know, burning up the campaign trail all over the state, putting a lot of miles on the vehicle and getting to meet a lot of people and go to a lot of places that, frankly, I didn't even know existed in Alabama before I started campaigning. So it's been wonderful.
Well, and I'm glad you're getting out and about. Any takeaways there from getting around the state so far?
Yeah, I think it's really, really early. And I think I think all the auditor candidates are running into the same issue, which is a lot of people are not that familiar with the auditor, what the auditor does. And everybody knows the name Ziegler, but not everyone is necessarily familiar with what the auditor position does. So you're kind of educating the voters a little bit about the importance of the position. And, I am feeling the momentum build, though. We started putting out our large signs. We've got out about, I don't know, maybe 50 or 75 or big 4x8 signs across the state. And just trying to, you know, work on building my name ID a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, you're from a part of the state that, relative to the rest of the state of Alabama, a little isolated, the Shoals area. But that's certainly a hurdle you think you seem to be overcoming.
Yeah, it does make it harder. You know, if you're running statewide and you live in Birmingham or Montgomery and you're kind of centralized in the state, it's a lot easier to get around. You're never more than, you know, 3 hours from anything. Well, a lot of the places I go, you know, I was campaigning in Clark County a couple days ago. Well, that's a 5-hour drive from where I live. So it is a little bit extra challenging, probably adds a little more expense on my campaign versus others just because there's more hotels and there's more road miles.
Well, and I know you're pounding the pavement, and also I guess our listeners aren't aware of a new father as well, so that equally is as challenging as I well know.
Yes. I think I'm an official dad now. I changed my first diaper a week or two ago, so very excited to be a new father. It was a girl. We didn't know that until the baby was born, and we named her Liberty.
Well, look at that. Well, congratulations on that. Let's get into some other things going on in the political realm here. Well, first off, I want you to you got a boost to your efforts, your push for constitutional carry last week. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, and he put this out on social media. So he's going to push the legislature to approve this next session. But a lot of that, every time you have a new session, you got to start from square one. How you looking this time around?
You know, it's looking really good. I'm going to make a bold prediction. I'm going to predict that constitutional carry passes this year. And I think it passes a strong bill. I don't think it's going to get watered down. I've done so much work laying the groundwork for this bill and alongside others. I know Shane Stringer has been a big supporter of this constitutional carry effort. And we're going to get it done this year. And I'll tell you what makes me so confident is when my first year I carried constitutional carry, a lot of the members of the legislature, quite frankly, were laughing. They were chuckling when I said I was going to carry this bill. And I only had 5 co-sponsors, maybe 6. It was very, very weak. Fast forward to this year, Jeff, I'm going to have 40 co-sponsors on my bill this year. And that includes Speaker Mac McCutcheon, Pro Tem Victor Gaston. That includes Education Budget Chairman Danny Garrett and includes Caucus Vice Chair Connie Rowe. All of them have put their John Hancock on the constitutional carry bill this year. The caucus, the mood amongst the caucus is, yes, let's get this bill passed. It's the right time. Our voters want this. Our base demands it. Let's get it done this year. And then I reached out to Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth, and I said, hey, would you consider, you know, supporting this bill? And he said, I sure would. He said, come up to my office. Let's get a picture together, and I'll do a post on Facebook. So that's exactly what happened. You know this as well as I do, Jeff. It's kind of rare to have Lieutenant Governor, you know, come out so publicly, take a photo with somebody and say, I support this bill. We need to pass this bill right here. But this is something he was passionate about even when he was serving in the state house years ago. And quite frankly, he was like, wow, how did you even get it to this point, Andrew? It was like, almost, I never thought I'd see this day. It was almost the attitude when I talked to him. So really appreciative of his efforts to stand up for freedom and liberty and his defense of the Second Amendment. And I do think you're going to see a bill passed this year.
Well, I tell you what, the hurdle to me politically has always been this. Law enforcement typically, the Sheriff's Association in Alabama, never were big on this. But I think you have a lot of former law enforcement in the Alabama legislature right now that this registry or this database, or well, not a registry, but the database of people that are not allowed to have a permit or whatever it may be, that you weed out the people that aren't allowed, has made the constitutional carry more of a possibility, it seems.
Well, you're right about that. That wasn't the whole story. A lot of these pro-law enforcement people are just realizing that, you know, law enforcement, yes, we don't want to make your job harder, but our number one job, we're all sworn to uphold the Constitution. And I spent a lot of time working with committee chairman Alan Treadaway. Became friends with Alan Treadaway over a few years. And he was the person that had held up constitutional carry for, you know, years, many, many years, wouldn't allow it to come up in this committee. But I made friends with Treadaway, and he understands the Constitution. And finally, he said, you know what, we need to get this done. And this year, he put his name on my bill. I should have mentioned that as well. The committee chairman has now co-sponsored the bill. So I was the first one to ever pass constitutional carry out of a House committee. I accomplished that in April of this year. And when that happened, everyone woke up and said, wait a minute, that's never happened before. This constitutional carry is coming, and there's nothing we can do to stop it.
Are you getting any interest in the Senate? I know Gerald Allen for years has been Senator Allen has been a big proponent of this. But you think it's what are the prospects in the upper chamber?
The rumors I'm hearing are that the Senate knows it's coming as well, and that they're going to try to beat us to it. that's actually what I've heard, which I take as a fantastic sign. Jeff, I don't care if it's a Senate bill that comes down and passes in the House, if it's a House bill that I send up or Shane Stringer sends up. My concern is not whose name is on the bill. This bill is so important. I just want this bill to pass. That's all I care about. We don't need to let egos get in the way of passing a good bill. And I'm certainly going to keep mine in check, and I'm going to be very supportive of any bill that meets the four-part test for what makes a true constitutional carry bill. I'm going to be supportive of that bill.
Joined by State Representative Andrew Sorrell, a candidate for state auditor on the Republican ticket. Andrew, last week, or the week before last, well, I guess last week, technically, the special session, and not necessarily, it was all in the name of reapportionment. But a couple bills getting out of the legislature signed into law by Governor Ivey dealing with the vaccine mandate at the federal level. What was your general reception of those efforts?
Well, this is fantastic news. I've been on the radio for months calling on the governor to do something, calling on the governor to include medical freedom legislation in the call of a special session. That did not happen. I went ahead and introduced an anti-mask mandate bill in the first special session we had 6 weeks ago. You know, just because it's not in the call doesn't mean you can't introduce the bill. So I went ahead and introduced the bill. Unfortunately, it didn't get a hearing, but the public pressure continued to build. And by this special session, I was sure that the governor would include some medical freedom bills in the call. Well, once again, I was let down. It didn't happen. But when we got down there, Jeff, the Senate basically said, look, we're doing this. We're about to pass good bills and drop them in your lap downstairs. What are y'all going to do with them? And the mood amongst the caucus was, yeah, we need to take action. Like, we are getting untold numbers of phone calls and emails from constituents who are about to lose their job over these vaccine mandates, and they wanted us to fight for them. So I was thrilled at how it worked out last week. I just couldn't be happier. We passed two good bills. Did they go as far as I wanted to? No. Did they protect all the different classes of people that I wanted them to? No. But they did take some steps in the right direction. Now your employer by default has to grant your exemption. If you fill out a religious exemption, your employer can't be like, no, I'm just going to disregard that. No, they have to accept it. That's a really, really good thing. And now people are not going to be able to get, they're not going to have their 14-year-old child come home and say, hey, I got a vaccine, Mom. I mean, that's crazy, right? I mean, so we changed the law to where now it requires parental notification. If your 14-year-old wants to get a COVID vaccine, you've got to know about it. So we made some really positive steps for freedom and liberty, in Alabama last week, and I couldn't be happier.
Were you surprised at the level of the pushback? I mean, I figured it was, you know, the business community, they got to act in their interest, and that they handle things the way they do, and look, it's just part of the process. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and Cameron Smith, AL.com, that were, you know, the fear was for him was we're replacing a mandate with a mandate, that you're telling business what to do. You know, that whole discussion about whether this is conservative or if it isn't, did any of that ever, did you ever weigh any of that in on this when it came to this issue?
Oh, goodness, I absolutely did. As you know, I'm a small business owner. I own two businesses myself. I don't like the government telling me what to do with my business either. But the conclusions I came to were twofold. Number one, it's the job of government to protect individual liberty and freedom first. Above all else, that's our responsibility, protect individuals. Businesses come second to me. And I hate to say that. I don't want it to sound mean or callous, but that's the truth. The government exists to protect individual freedom and liberty. And the individuals don't have lobbyists. The business groups all have paid lobbyists, and they're very, very effective lobbyists, obviously, in Montgomery. Nobody debates the power that these business groups have. And most of the time, what they're working for are fantastic things that I support. But in this one regard, your employer doesn't own your body. They just rent your time from you when you work for them. They don't get to make your medical decisions for you. And I had an opportunity to debate Cameron, actually, on Dale Jackson's show up in Huntsville. We debated for a good 10 or 15 minutes about this very topic. And I said, first of all, it's not a federal law. This is just a mandate from Joe Biden. So I don't think you can use the Supremacy Clause argument here. And I think it's absolutely within the power of the states to stand up and step in and try to fight back on behalf of these people that are about to lose their jobs. At the heart of this, the core of this issue is discrimination. We don't allow businesses to say, hey, I'm not going to hire this person because they're African-American, or, hey, I'm not going to hire this person because they're a woman. Businesses don't have that right. We already mandate to businesses there are certain things you cannot discriminate on that basis. This is medical discrimination. Businesses should not be able to discriminate on their customers based on their medical status, and they certainly should not be able to discriminate on their employees because of their medical status. So my response to people who make that argument is, we already tell businesses you can't discriminate. We're just adding another item to the discrimination list. You can't discriminate against the unvaccinated.
Yeah, and looks like we lost Andrew there. Andrew Searle said something very interesting to me there in that interview there, dealing with constitutional carry. He thinks it's going to happen this quadrennium, well, this quadrennium, this coming up legislative session. I tell you, it's been on the docket for years and years and years and years, and every year it falls short. Some committee or the sheriff's lobby, the sheriff's association, just comes out stridently against it. And when that happens, you know, these sheriffs in these 67 counties carry a lot of political clout. They win countywide elections. They're against something. You don't want to get them on your bad side if you're running for re-election in the legislature. Ask Shane Stringer how that worked out. But interesting that he thinks it's going to happen this time around. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.